Hello, everyone. This is William from the NFL Power Hour. You are listening to CJLO 1690 AM in Montreal.
You are listening to CJLO News. The legendary abandoned Empress Theater on Sherbrooke and Old Orchard is going to be partially demolished and converted into an art space after years of attempts to revive the building. The Empress Theater, built in 1927, was an iconic Egyptian revival-style theater that once catered to NDG's artistic movie-going community. But since 1992, the building has been sitting inactive and decommissioned, with water damage eating away at its interior, while the stone sarcophagi and scarabs look out onto the street through a chain-link fence. Promises to rebirth this building have been continuous since its decommissioning, but now the members of Ensemble Montréal are acting to turn the space into an outdoor arts center. The building is now set to be demolished, with only the facades facing Sherbrooke and Old Orchard left standing. The space between will be converted into a courtyard for community events, including outdoor movie screenings. This timeline is ambitious. They plan to have phase one of this project completed by fall of 2027. Here is Côte de Neige NDG Mayor Stephanie Valenzuela.
Concretely, this first phase is something that we are capable of doing under our administration without any other partnership.
Well, the city is allocating $10 million for this first phase. Later phases will include collaboration with private developers to build a new building on the lot as well. Scott McLeod is an artist in NDG and a spokesperson for the Empress Cinema Collective, a group that has been advocating for updates to the theater for decades now. He has fond memories of attending the cinema in the 80s.
It was an outing for people of all ages, all generations at that time, and it was amazing to have something like that so close.
The Empress Theater Collective understands the need to destroy everything except the facade, but they are uncertain about what private development might bring to the area in the future. McLeod hopes that the city stays dedicated to including some art spaces while acknowledging housing is a top priority.
Yes, we want to keep the historic reference of it being this deco Egyptian period piece, one-of-a-kind cinema in the facade. I accept that, you know, losing everything inside, but maintaining arts and culture and communities keep something alive, and we need art and culture. Without it, I think we're suffering.
For CJLO News, I'm Adam Innes.
All right. Hello, everyone. Welcome to our show, Towards a Common Horizon. My name's Emma. I'm here again with Hope from last, if you were with us 2 weeks ago on our last episode, we're excited to be back. We're going to start with a little bit, if you're a new listener, kind of what our show is about, what we're going to be chatting about today. And we also have a special guest with us here. So the kind of second half of our show will be a little interview with a seasoned campaigner from Edmonton, Alberta. I was going to share some of her progressive campaigning advice with us. We're very pumped that you're here with us. Our show, Towards a Common Horizon, is led by the members of a organizing group called Common Horizon. This is a national group, but we're the Montreal chapter here, the very first of the chapters to have a radio show. So the other chapters and cities take note. Maybe we'll see some more Common Horizon radio starting up in other provinces. And basically, Common Horizon, we're working towards building a mass movement of everyday people. So our vision is that, you know, the billionaire class, their power is not just sort of by nature. We together working as working people can take some of that power away, win solutions to the climate crisis, as well as dealing with things like securing good jobs, addressing affordability, and ensuring a dignified life for all. Like we said, there's chapters of Common Horizon across the country. So if you're tuning in from somewhere outside of Montreal, you can also check out your local Common Horizon chapter. But the Montreal folks among us every 2 weeks will be here on Sundays at 8 p.m. Chatting about all things climate and affordability. I'm kind of trying to connect some of the dots between sort of these systems of inequality and climate collapse that are sometimes seen as kind of disparate issues, and sort of talking about big picture solutions that address these multifaceted crises that we face today. So that's kind of our deal. Today we're going to be talking a little bit about campaigning. So talking about progressive campaigns, things that have inspired us that we've seen in terms of campaigns that are getting a lot of success in the last little while, very inspiring, hopeful campaigns. We're also going to talk a little bit about just sort of what we think in terms of this moment for progressive campaigning in kind of this current political climate, what progressive campaigns can do to be successful and to win power. And then, like I said, we're going to chat with a political campaigner in Edmonton who's joining us in the Montreal studio. Very exciting guest appearance for kind of our second half of the episode. So yeah, maybe I'll just toss over to Hope really quick. Anything you want to kind of say to kick it off before we get into talking about some specific campaigns that we're excited about?
Hey, I'm Hope. Like Emma said, I don't have tons to add. I think this is just like a nice second show that we're gonna do. Last show we talked a lot about climate hope and kind of where we want to start off with in our show generally in talking about like the politics and organizing like landscape of climate action, and I think like campaigns is a natural successor. So I'm excited to just see where this conversation goes.
Right on. So maybe just to give you, as our listeners, kind of a sense of what we're going to kind of go through, we're going to start by just talking about some examples of campaigns that we're really excited about. I feel like this is specifically a very exciting moment for progressive campaigns. We've seen a lot of really kind of exciting up-and-coming candidates. I'm sure you can anticipate who some of those might be, but we'll get into some of the ones that we're kind of particularly passionate about. Just sort of looking a little bit bigger picture in terms of what these campaigns kind of have in common in terms of how progressive candidates can get success and what we think kind of is important for those campaigns to prioritize and focus on. And then we'll jump into interviewing Harnoor. So maybe we'll start off with kind of talking about some of these campaigns that inspire us. Do you want to go first, Hope, or do you want me to go first?
I can go first. I am trying to think of which one to choose from our little list. I think that let's start with the Mamdani campaign. I mean, I think like everyone is, or like not everyone, but I think a lot of people are probably more familiar with the Zoran campaign. It blew up on social media, which I think, you know, we can get into that a little bit more later in terms of that success specifically. But I think we're seeing a trend of any campaign, whether or not it be progressive or further right wing, we're seeing a lot of success with general affordability talk points and like kind of straight shooting, you know, quote unquote straight shooting talking points that really get to the like realities that people are facing on the ground. I think a lot of people feel quite disillusioned and disenfranchised with politics writ large, and I think that the success of the Mamdani campaign not only brought in young people back into believing that politics could work for them, but it also brought in just like everyday people who have been disillusioned for a really long time with politics, with like politicians promising different things and you know, consistently nagging on those promises, and just generally like just talking in a way that felt very like disconnected from people's everyday lives, in a way that was not only inspiring because people were saying what the realities were, but also giving real solutions. So I'm thinking of the like, it's kind of amazing to watch these first few weeks of and months, I suppose, of the Zoran administration, of the Mamdani administration, because he's actually fulfilling some of his promises that he campaigned on, like the free daycare program is saving families like $26,000. The reason I know that number, like, why do I know that number? But obviously because his campaigning is working, you know. He's saving families across the city thousands of dollars. He's, you know, the free bus campaign was really enticing. I remember seeing like that video of him on the Staten Island ferry talking about like, you know, it's very possible for cities to just make things free if they want to, and we want to prioritize that, you know, like really just talking about not only the issues that people are facing, but giving real solutions that would really make tangible differences in people's lives. And I think that that's what a kind of inspiring progressive campaign is, for me at least right now, is not only like, you know, people talking like it is, because, you know, right, like conservative politicians theoretically do that too. You know, I know a lot of people in my hometown who really identify with the straight shooters from the Conservative Party who are like, affordability, housing, whatever, you know, that's all true, but I don't believe their solutions. Whereas I think that the solutions that are being put forward by progressive candidates are like more realizable in terms of what, at least they align with my politics in terms of what I think are more investing into social solutions and not just something that will inevitably help the corporate class. So
totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's so interesting that like, definitely when I think about Zoran's campaign, it's like there's sort of this whole bucket of like beautiful progressive policies that I think you're right. It means so much that he has shown that he will not abandon those, that he is actually going to put action to those so soon. But then I think there's also just like Zoran Mamdani as a person. And I think it's interesting, like, my question always with political campaigns is like how much you can, you know, disentangle the sort of the actual policies and the things that people are theoretically voting for versus I think so many of us are also just deeply drawn to like a vibe and like a guy that we think is cool and interesting and kind. Like honestly, what moved me the most in terms of Zoran media that I've taken in is a video he made in some of the first like few weeks in office where he just like has New Yorkers come to visit him and chat with him about their concerns and why, like what they want him to consider as mayor. And there's like, yeah, there's an immigrant from Russia who is, you know, who's queer and is worried about her security within like her time in New York. And there's people worried about ICE. And there's folks who are worried about the bus. And there's like a kid playing with a super cute like toy bus. And I just like, there's a moment where like Zoran like cries with another woman. And it's just like, I remember being like, wow, this guy is like the real deal. This is something that we don't always see in politics that feels like it matters and like it's authentic and it's earnest. And I think that, you know, especially in an age where there's a lot of sort of cynicism around politics and around political organizing, I think, yeah, sort of alongside the importance of policy and of sort of concrete, you know, things you will do in office that will serve me, there's also just this like, are you a person I can trust and feel comfortable with having power? And I think that for me, at least, Mamdani is like, I'm like, yeah, I'm good with you being in charge of things. Like, I feel like I can trust you and that you're a real guy that is good. But I think that's like, how do you convey that to a public is also like such an art. Like you can be a beautiful, cool person and that can, it's hard for that to come across in your media and in your advertising. Because like, you know, I don't actually know Zoran Mamdani, obviously, right? Like he has very well curated the version of him that we see. And again, I believe that that is true to the version that, of him that is real. And I hope that it is. But that's also a product of his messaging and his campaigning, right? So I think that's super interesting.
Can I just quickly explain the thing that really inspired you, which was when yeah. he was in that museum? So that was inspired by Marina Abramović's, The Artist is Present work, which is when she was wearing like that beautiful red dress and she basically sat in a museum and invited, it's a performance piece, and she invited people, you know, gallery exhibitor or gallery visitors to just come and talk to her or engage with her, and she would just kind of sit there and listen. And so he, this was obviously like a very direct homage, but I think it's very powerful that he did it as a politician, like as a sitting politician in his first days of office. And as you just said, like, you know, doing this and being able to kind of not only present yourself as a public leader, but also as someone who people can believe in is an art. And I think he was very much connecting that and to becoming art. An artist.
Wow.
And I think it shows that he's very, I think, culturally in tune. And I think, you know, we can get into that later in terms of how that might be successful with younger people. But I think he, yeah, it shows that he's wanting to be a part of culture. And I think art is so much a part of culture. That's a conversation that's being had in Nova Scotia, at least. Shout out Nova Scotia. And they're cutting funds. Anyway, that's a tangent. But I think, like, I'm just saying, I think a successful politic these days that's resonating, at least with younger folks and you know, maybe more artist folks specifically, too, is if you show that you're in tune with culture and you're in tune with not only culture artistically, But also in like the milieus of just people's everyday lives, you know, it just shows that you care about what people care about. You care about what people are interested in, and you care about, you know, what they will spend their Saturday afternoons doing, which is what I think a lot of people feel that other politicians maybe don't, or other kind of candidates, political candidates, are just like so out of touch that they would not resonate with them generally. So
totally. I think maybe that's a great note on which to have a brief ad break. We'll be right back talking about some progressive campaigns.
We got a thing going on.
Good morning, good morning, good morning. Sorry to break up your ad break, but this is Death of the Mid-Range, your future favorite NBA talk show. We help you start off your week right every Monday morning at 9 a.m., bringing you a diversity of episodes on the beautiful sport of basketball. All of this is, of course, on CJLO. We will see you there.
Hola, this is Empanadas Ilegales, and you're listening to CJLO, broadcasting from beautiful Montreal, Quebec. Cometela!
Dive into the ultimate comic haven at Crossover Comics. Unleash your inner geek with the best selection of graphic novels, manga, games like Pokemon and Magic, in-store events, merch, and more. Our knowledgeable and friendly staff have got your back with awesome recommendations for your next read. Score big with a free account. Enjoy comic subscriptions and membership discounts. Be in on the action at 3560 Notre Dame West in St. Henry, right near Metro Lionel Brew. Crossover Comics, sharing your passions since 2012.
All right, welcome back. You're listening to Towards a Common Horizon on CJLO 1690 AM. We're super happy to have you. I'm Emma. I'm here with Hope.
Hi.
And we're chatting about campaigns. We're talking about progressives winning, which is very exciting. Feels like a thing that's happening more recently that we're pumped about. And stay tuned. Later on, we have an interview with an exciting guest, Harn Rokovchar, all the way from Edmonton. So stay pumped. All right, we just talked a little bit about Zoran Mamdani. Obviously, super exciting, super galvanizing, someone that a lot of folks are paying attention to internationally. But back here in Canada, we're also having some, I think, really exciting progressive candidates that have been, we've kind of had our eye on also. I actually had the chance to work a little bit with Emily Lowen, who's currently the Green Party leader in British Columbia. Not quite the youngest Green Party leader of all time, because there was this wild, like, 21-year-old back in the day who really was out there, but definitely the youngest, provincial party leader in a long time, and is doing really, really rad things out in BC. I think, it's very possible there will be a spring election coming up. So, you know, keep an eye out if you're a BC listener for her campaign. I think she has a lot of really interesting, cool stances. I am a very proud owner of a Dump the Oligarchs baseball cap, Emily merch that was made. And I think, yeah, what was so cool to me about Emily Lowen's campaign is how much she, I think, acted on something that progressives often say is true, but is not always as easy to see as being true, which is that young people feel disenfranchised, and when they are spoken to and engaged, they will actually, like, come out for you, and they will pull for you, and they will rally for you, and volunteer for you, and vote for you. And I think, yeah, lots of older folks are sometimes maybe doubting that narrative. It's almost sort of an overdone narrative, I feel like, in a way, where it's like, okay, is, like, where are the younger folks sometimes? It's like, okay, is it not time for them to appear yet? But Emily, when she was running to become the Green Party leader, got, like, a ton of memberships sold, like record-breaking numbers from young people who had never been involved with party politics before, people who were definitely not part of kind of that political machine, but saw the Green Party as a place where they could be engaging with party politics in the way that they wanted to see party politics operating, and actually working for progressive change in a really meaningful way, really holding the NDP government accountable in BC, and adding that, you know, because the Green Party plays actually a really important role in maintaining that government right now. They have a really pivotal role to play in the government. And so making sure that role is, you know, actually pushing for progressive change, especially on things like pipelines, protecting old growth forests, like some really key environmental issues. And so, yeah, I feel like that was a really cool chance to see, you know, the real deal of young people coming out and supporting and, yeah, having a little bit of silly fun, like having a camo hat that says dump the oligarchs is amazing. It's like a cherished item in my closet. So big fan of that. Yeah. Anything you want to add on that, Hope?
Yeah, I think what's really exciting to see with the Emily campaign, because, yeah, I was watching so many of you kind of get involved, and it was so inspiring to see how many people really rallied and, you know, hit the ground running and really spent so many of their, like, volunteer hours in a week just on this campaign full time, just as, like, off the side of people's desks. And I think what's interesting about, like, that campaign and what we're kind of seeing in any kind of leadership race that involves acquiring memberships is that I think a lot of people don't feel like there's an outlet to, like, have their voice heard. Even if they have all these views, even if they feel like they're progressive, they don't really necessarily feel like there's an outlet for them to, like, have a voice and influence things. And I think that, like, whether it be, like, party politics or whether it be, like, joining a membership organization like Common Horizon or, like, anything that's, like, more similar in terms of, like, the institutionalization of, like a union even, maybe. Like, you know, these are kind of outlets that are, like, not as common for people to be a part of and feel like they have a voice in. And I think it's quite inspiring to be able to see people want to have that kind of system and structure to be able to voice their concerns, that it doesn't just feel like throwing a letter out into the ether and kind of screaming out into the void on social media. It feels like, oh no, I'm actually part of a structure that will, like, democratically hear my voice and value what I say. And you actually do have an influence in shifting how this potential leadership goes. You know, I think, like, the kind of resounding number of volunteers of especially young people shows that there's an obvious appetite for, like, more structured, formalized campaigns and kind of organizing.
Yeah. So that's actually a really cool observation. I hadn't thought about it that way. You're right, actually, that specifically also, like, membership for political parties is also cool because you a lot of time don't even have to be a voting age, right? Like, in a lot of provincial and federal parties, you can be, like, 14 even.
And you also don't necessarily need to be a Canadian citizen. You can have PR. Whoa. And you can still be a member of a lot of parties, at least.
Yeah, that's really cool. So it's also, like, yeah, a chance to be involved in sort of mainstream political, like, processes that you maybe aren't actually even allowed to be a part of in other, like, levels. Like, yeah, I think party membership is a cool way to, yeah, have your voice set in that structure that you can actually, like, really make a difference, that you can see, right? Like, the person who heads that party has a huge amount of sway over the policy direction, the other kinds of candidates that are recruited for that party. Like, that's massive. Maybe that's a good segue into someone who also was recently collecting party memberships, and a big, obviously, campaign that we're seeing play out in sort of Canada's, you know, more progressive party federally, the NDP. We're seeing, I think, a real interesting kind of identity question in terms of what the NDP federally is going to become. What do you think, Hope? How's this election shaken out in your mind?
Well, I just want to clarify, I did one phone banking shift and that was it. So it was not anything. I'm definitely not leading anything. But yeah, I mean, I think similar observations. I think a lot of people are hitting the ground running with many campaigns. I suppose I won't necessarily.
Yeah, we're like we don't endorse any candidate for the NDP leadership, but I think there's some interesting kind of different styles of campaigning that maybe echo some of the same trends that we've seen in other successful progressive campaigns. And I think maybe the obvious, like, elephant in the room is that we've seen Abby Lewis, I think, use a lot of those same strategies in terms of you know, mobilizing young people, connecting with lots of different communities, like, in terms of specific sort of ethnic groups, specific community groups, specific, like, campuses, just, like, really, I think, getting into communities where people are at, which I think is something that Zohran also did really effectively.
Yeah, I mean, they're definitely taking notes from the Zohran campaign in that, like, there's some really easily digestible, like, 6-point policy plans that they are trying to deliver in their campaign, which I think is smart in terms of if you're thinking of your audience, you're having an event, you want your audience to leave knowing at least one of those policy points that you will deliver on, hopefully, should you be elected, you know. And I think they've been doing a good job at simplifying those. I think the NDP and just progressive like politics generally is, it gets so caught in the weeds with jargon, with like different you know, intellectual elitist, you know, quote unquote talking points that get really like theoretical, that feel really you know, out of touch with the average person. You know, I think the average person who like it, and it can feel really condescending, I think, is a really often a complaint that I think can be quite valid. And so I think there's been some interesting attempts in this NDP leadership race where, you know, you're seeing different candidates trying to address that and trying to, you know, do it in their various ways. I think there's some people who are really good at being able to kind of talk in a regular kind of neighborly way, like, oh, I'd grab a beer with that guy. Like, people love that guy.
Yeah.
versus like trying to still be like professional, intellectual, but not necessarily like too overly. There's also like weird internal shots fired, I feel like, all the time still. And that feels quite honestly unprofessional. I feel like if you're like someone who doesn't know the internal party dynamics, it feels weird to kind of hear about that. But I feel like, you know, that's kind of within the scope of what we're hearing on the campaign trail as well right now, which I also would be curious later on when we interview Harner, is like what the kind of faux pas and that what really kind of distances people, like alienates people. Anyway, that's for later though. But yeah, I don't know. That's kind of the NDP snapshot, is like there's a lot of different people and a lot of different tactics. And I'm quite curious to see how it all shapes up in the next few weeks, because voting ends now. If you have an NDP membership, you should vote starting tomorrow, I think, is when voting. So
yeah. So we'll see soon. Maybe that'll be interesting. Actually, maybe we'll do like a little postmortem about that one based on kind of how it shakes out. I think, yeah, maybe just the last thing to say about Avi Lewis's campaign. Also some like actually very similar policy points from Zohran too, right? The idea of like a public option for groceries is something that I had never heard of before Mamdani's campaign. And then I'm now hearing, it feels like kind of everywhere, obviously at least in these two significant places. So it's interesting too, I think, that like sort of progressive precedent setting that can happen, where if one progressive candidate is able to kind of put something really bold out there and it feels like it's been successful, then that also sort of opens the doors for other progressive candidates to do similar things that might not have felt possible before, like that, you know, that kind of Overton window shifting and even just I think precedent setting feels like kind of this term too, of just like, this is a thing that can work, you could try it in your context and see, and that's pretty cool.
And we're so attuned to accepting people being like, oh, well, we have to shift rightwards to bring more people into the tent. And it's like, but have we even tried going left? Like, has anyone actually tried? So, and we'll see. We'll see how this goes.
Totally. Cool. Okay. Well, I think it sounds like a great time to shift to our special guest. This is me giving her a heads up so she can emotionally prepare for us to chat with her. So I'll start with just a little bit of an intro to who Harnoor is, who we're about to interview. I'll say, obviously, I love and cherish Harnoor. She's a good friend of mine. But so I'm going to kind of hilariously give you this professional version of her bio, where I'm also just like, she's a beautiful, wonderful person. But yeah, basically, Harnoor is a person who's been deeply involved in organizing, both in kind of a community organizing way. Actually, the first time I found out about Common Horizon was at her house in Edmonton, and also in political organizing. She's done a ton of work on campaigns. She was the youngest and first racialized person to be the director of field operations on a mayoral campaign that was successful also for Amarjeet Sohi, who has just finished his time as mayor of Edmonton. And yeah, I think something that is really clear to me through all of Harnoor's work is how much she emphasizes kind of bringing her specific lived experience as an immigrant, as a woman, and really advocating for communities and making sure that, you know, we're working towards a more equitable, inclusive, accessible world. So she works right now in Alberta for the Alberta NDP caucus. She's also the Edmonton lead for the South Asian Social Justice Network with the Council of Agencies Serving South Asians, the CASSA. And yeah, does a ton of outreach. She is the outreach girl. So she does a lot of outreach, strategic outreach for Edmonton and Northern Alberta with her role for the Alberta NDP. She's also been involved in this really cool org that some folks of you may have heard about called Ask Her, which basically helps kind of encourage different representation in municipal government, especially for women and gender diverse candidates, and kind of having them get training and development and supporting their campaigns. We also went to university together at the University of Alberta studying political science. So she's been in the game a long time. She has a lot of expertise from kind of the inside of some of these campaigns, what those conversations are in terms of, you know, what's happening in the room in those progressive kind of operations. So we're very excited to hear her her thoughts today. Welcome, Harnoul. I'll let you say hello.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me here. This is kind of surreal. So.
Yeah, we're very excited. All right, so yeah, maybe I feel like something that folks who are mostly observers of campaigns and haven't been involved in them would like to hear about is kind of what's it like working on a political campaign, especially maybe for you as a young racialized woman? Like, is that different for you? What's like the atmosphere of being inside of a campaign? What does that feel like?
Yeah. So, there's a lot to unpack there in that question. So, political campaigns, for those who haven't done them before, or maybe for those who are like thinking about doing them, I think they're some of the most exciting kind of spaces that you can be a part of, and some of the most lively, energetic, fun teams that you can be a part of. I think political campaigns are also incredible professional development if you are looking for that sort of thing. I think that, you know, no matter your background, whether you do communications or you do organizing, you know, where you're kind of a policy wonk, political campaigns have space for everybody in them. And you grow so much in a campaign because you really, you know, there's so much work on the table for everyone to do. And so everyone kind of gets to take a big bite out of that work, and you get to grow in ways that I don't think you've ever maybe could have imagined for yourself. And everything touches on politics touches everything, right? So no matter what issue you're interested in, or no matter what kind of work you're interested in, politics will touch that. And so you can be involved in that way. And then kind of maybe more in terms of like what it's actually like, you know, I think it's such an exciting and hopeful and fun space to be in, but it's also like a lot of grunt work. You know, it's a lot of just like you know, you have to make sure that you're building something over the course of like 28 days. So it's a month. So you have to treat it both like a marathon, because, you know, 28 days is a long time. You don't want to burn out on like day 12. You don't want to like kind of catch your wind too early on, you know, like day 12, because you actually have to make it all the way till the end. But it's also like a bit of a sprint, right? Like every day you're waking up and you're like trying to leave it all out there. You're working like really long days. You're doing really hard work. And often you're kind of doing like the same thing over and over again. Like it's a lot of door knocking, a lot of phone banking, trying to reach voters where they're at. But then you also want to make sure that you're able to do that for a long period of time over almost a month. So, it's like a mentor of mine calls it summer camp for adults, because that is actually what it is. And the friendships that you make on campaigns, professional, you know, relationships that you develop, they stay with you for a lifetime. They stay with you for a very long time, because it's kind of like you're in the trenches with someone, and those kind of bonds that you develop kind of are forged by fire. And so they're the best of times for sure.
Yeah, that's so beautiful. I'm like, let's go campaign, guys. Let's get me fired up. I think you're so right about those kind of relationships and how intimate they become. If you're like a progressive candidate hoping to win, if you're an underdog, what makes a good campaign team? Who do you need beside you?
Yeah, you need a couple. You definitely need a couple of like key people. And then I think from there on out, each campaign, you know, builds their campaign team a little bit differently. And also like, you know, what depending on what kind of role you're campaigning for, you would want to build your team a little bit differently. So I think I think there's a couple of key roles. So one for sure is campaign manager, right? And your campaign manager is the kind of chief advisor to the candidate. They're also the person that manages the team of staff and volunteers under them. So they have to be a really good manager of people. Just like in any other workplace, your manager has to be a really good manager of people. So you want that skill in your campaign manager. And you also want them to understand high-level strategy and also how to run political operations. And you want them to have a good relationship, obviously, with the candidate, because they're going to be giving the candidate advice on things that may be really sensitive, that may be really hard. You know, the candidate might be having a really hard day, and that's kind of the person that they turn to. So that person plays a really important role, including on staff culture and staff morale, right? So that's kind of the role of the manager. And then, you know, some of the more technical things, you also obviously want a really good financial agent, you know, someone who's going to keep your campaign compliant, so you're making sure you're not breaking any rules. That's the kind of boring stuff. And then typically, you know, campaigns have a communications person, right? Someone who understands the candidate's voice and their vision for how they want to communicate with people, and has a really good grasp of how to do that through different channels. And then you want someone who's like kind of the organizer on the campaign, right? The one who's connected to the communities that you're trying to tap into, the one who can run a really great kind of voter contact operation, which is just a fancy way of saying the one who kind of like oversees volunteers, who talks to voters, and they're kind of building that machine up. So those are kind of like the key roles on a campaign. And then, you know, on every campaign, you'll see people form their teams a little bit differently. You'll see kind of the leadership team, you know, maybe be uniquely set up. But those are some of the key roles that I think you want to fill on a campaign. But at the end of the day, you know, I think the best thing that I would say is like no matter in any of these roles, you just want people, I think, first and foremost, to be just good, kind people whose values align with the values of the campaign. And then I think, you know, obviously you want them to have skills in the role that they're coming in for. But you can also train those skills up on a campaign, right? Like the person doesn't have to have done political communications before. They don't necessarily have to have done political organizing before. You can kind of train for those skills, and you can take skills that you learned in other settings and apply them to the political campaign context. But you really can't train someone to like get along with people well, right? And politics is like about people. So, you know, first and foremost, you want to make sure that you have good people around you. And then you can, you know, obviously if they're skilled, that's even better.
Yeah. Okay. Awesome. Maybe we'll take a quick ad break, and then we'll ask Karnoor a little bit more about kind of her campaign advice and what progressives need to do to win.
Interested in audio storytelling at all? Volunteer with CJLO's news department. We'll teach you the ins and outs of audio journalism, no experience needed. You'll learn interviewing, scripting, recording, editing, and we'll support you every step of the way on your journey to producing your own original reporting. We also take a lot of pride in our local focus and coverage of the issues often forgotten by mainstream outlets. Join the team and get your voice on air by filling out a volunteer application form at cjlo.com/volunteer. Or come to one of our weekly pitch meetings, Mondays at 1 p.m. on the Loyola campus, CC430.
Hola, ici Empanadas Ilegales, et vous écoutez CJLO, une émission provenant de Montréal, Québec. Dansez avec nous!
Join us every Tuesday night at midnight on CJLO for Floydian Slip. It's an hour of music by Pink Floyd. It's Craig Bailey, your host for an hour from the dark side of the moon. An hour of Pink Floyd, Floydian Slip, every Tuesday night at midnight, right here on 1690 AM CJLO. Learn more online at floydianslip.com.
All right, welcome back. You're listening to Towards a Common Horizon on CJLO 1690 AM. Hope and I are here with our special guest, Karnoor Kocher, who we're asking about campaigning. She's a little campaign wizard, so we're getting her thoughts. All right, cool. Next question, Karnoor, are you ready? She's in the hot seat. What do progressive candidates need to do to win? I will let you interpret that however you want.
Okay. Well, if only I had the answer to that question, I would share that with everybody, so I'll just kind of give my thoughts on it. I think Hope, you know, touched on a lot of what I would have said, which is like, they need to talk to real people and talk like real people. And not just that, but like be really focused on solutions. You know, something I read a while ago, which is that often in politics and in campaigning, we get into this habit And I think, frankly, it comes out of laziness. We get into this habit of just kind of repeating people's problems at them. Like, we just tell people that grocery prices are high, for example. People know that. That's like people's lived experience, right? Like, they know that it sucks to go grocery shopping right now. But what they want is someone that will tell them what they will do to make that problem go away or to help with that problem. So I think Hope really hit the nail on the head on so many of those things. I think the other thing I would say to build on what Hope said is that I think progressives often make the mistake of becoming too obsessed or too distracted by moral righteousness. So I think progressives, you know, get really caught up in trying to always say the right thing or trying to talk about every single issue or trying to really, you know, be like, we protect the folks that are the most vulnerable in our society. And all those things are really important. And of course, those are the values that drive us as progressives. But we have to remember that we have to just, I think, ask ourselves if those are the things that are going to help us win or if those are the things that we want to do when we win, right? And the things that will help you win are not necessarily, you know, always have to be the things that you say that you're going to do when you do win. Right. So I think just being really disciplined and focused on the issues, for example, like the ones that Hope was talking about, like on the issues of affordability, cost of living, you know, in Canada, specifically healthcare too, is becoming a big issue across the country. So I think being really, really focused and disciplined on those issues and not getting distracted by all these other issues where you want people to know that you're fighting for what's best. You really want kind of your campaign to be about, obviously, you know, you want issues that go to your base, but you really want to be focused on winning. And the way you often win is by getting the undecided voters, right? And the persuadable voters, as some people call them. So I think that sense of discipline and that kind of being able to separate between what issue you want to campaign on versus what issue you're just like talking about to be morally righteous or to have the moral high ground, maybe is a better way of saying it. I think that to me is like the stuff that can really really make or break a campaign. And that kind of also, you know, Mamdani's campaign is a great example of that, where he didn't really campaign on Trump. He didn't really campaign on like being like, we're going to make New York like the safe haven for immigrants, or we're going to make New York like this, like, you know, like kind of, I don't know what you want to call it, but like this great global metropolitan city that's open and that's progressive and that's liberal compared to like Trump's dystopian America. He was like, no, we're going to campaign on making New York a safe, affordable city that works for its working class people, right? And I think in doing that, he's actually been really great about working with Trump to get the things that he needs to get done also, right? But I think just that sense of like, he wasn't campaigning on being like, New York is this kind of, you know, liberal, you know, safe haven, this like liberal heaven. He was like, no, like this is about making the city work for working class people. That in and of itself is message discipline. That in and of itself is getting new people to vote for you. So they actually win the campaign. And then of course, when you win the campaign, you're going to govern like a progressive, right? And then you'll do all those things in which you can accomplish, you know, the goals that you lay out. But I think that discipline was like super, super interesting to me. So
yeah, well said.
They say that what progressives have done in the last, like, you know, few decades has been a lot of progress on the language we use, but less so on the actual tangible
outcomes,
ways that we live. Exactly, 100%. Outcomes. So, like, yeah, we might all be able to police each other's language now, but that doesn't actually put anyone's well-being necessarily at a better. At a material benefit. So
yeah, and I think there's like conversations that are happening now in that. Like I remember after, you know, Trump won, like Ezra Klein talked about it a little bit. He was like, well, I shouldn't say talked about it. I just saw a tweet. Guys, this is where I'm at.
Accountability.
I just saw a tweet. Yeah, this is like, you know, when you say you're like, I read an article. I watched a reel.
Yeah. I read a headline.
Yeah. I watched a TikTok. But he basically was talking about how, like, you know, Democrats talk a lot about, for example, like building the railway, building Amtrak. But it's like how many meters of Amtrak, kilometers of Amtrak have they actually been able to build over the last like decade or whatever? But it's like just, I think to Hope's point, like actually thinking about the outcomes and then being really focused on actually delivering outcomes for people instead of just like talking ourselves into, you know, into alignment, right? So, yeah.
I feel like Hope also had an interesting kind of question that I feel like maybe kind of gets into this question of sort of messaging and what progressives should be talking about kind of like if there's any sort of like faux pas. Do you want to circle back to that, Hope?
Yeah, I mean, I'm just curious as someone who's probably been on the ground, like in interacting with people in a much more day-to-day basis than either of us have been, what have you found that like hits nerves with people? Or like, do you find that like when you're like the candidate that you're working for, if they say like what, if anything, what would they say that kind of doesn't resonate? And are there ways that like just feel off to people and then they kind of get turned off? Or are there ways that like, you know, eventually like something has to change? Like, I don't know. I guess I'm just curious about like, negative feedback to like messaging and how that's kind of addressed.
Yeah. So I would like, I think my, like, I have two, I think, broad reflections on that. I think the first thing that I would say is like, people are, at least from the circles that I'm in, are really hungry for like solutions, right? Which I think also goes back to what you were saying. They really want to know what you would do to help solve the problem that they're facing. And I don't think that they're really looking for people that will just keep telling them that there's problems. Although, to be fair, that is also important, right? Like, you want people to blame the problem on the right person, right? So like, you want them to blame the issues that they're facing on, for example, billionaires, or in my case, the Alberta, government, which is the UCP and Premier Daniel Smith. So you do want them to place the blame on your opponent, but then they also really want to know what you're going to do to help solve those issues that they're facing. And then I think for me, one thing that I always kind of train people to do, and I have been trained to do, which is when I'm talking to people, you know, I ask them about what issues they care about first, and then I talk to them about that. And, you know, I will talk to them a little bit about how, like, the person I'm campaigning for, the party I'm campaigning for is good on those issues. But then I actually talk to them about why I personally, as an individual, and supporting that party or that person or that campaign, and, you know, maybe kind of bring in the issue that they care about. So for me, it's like, you know, to be honest, like, yeah, the kind of broader messaging is important, you know, to hit voters with. But like, if I'm having a one-on-one conversation with someone, I am not there like regurgitating stuff. I'm just there being like, oh, you care about healthcare. This is why I think the Alberta NDP is better on healthcare. Me as like an individual voter, as you know, and I'm like, I think that they're better on it because I think they actually care more about getting family doctors to stay in Alberta, for example. So I think for me, it's like letting that stuff exist in the ether, but then when I'm having individual conversations, to really be like, this is why I'm supporting them. So you feel like you can trust me, and then hopefully I can kind of bring you over to voting for them too. But then, yeah, I think also like people are looking for a messaging that's more like issues focused for sure. Solutions focused for sure as well.
Yeah, those are great tips. Yeah, I'm wondering kind of the last sort of bucket of things that I'd love to ask you about is, especially someone who's done some community organizing as well as political organizing, kind of how those things relate to each other. Because I do think that there are folks who would say that, you know, the kind of traditional political arena, elected officials, parties, is just like a lost cause for progressives.
Yeah.
What would you kind of say to those folks?
Yeah, and I've had lots of conversations around that with my friend Emma Jackson as well, who, you know, is such a big, big player and influence and leader in progressive movements too. So when I first started off in politics, this is like such a weird thing to bring up, but I guess like this is the perfect place to bring up. I was like, what do I call myself? Because I'm like not a community organizer, but I like work in politics. But I like everybody that I knew around me at that age was like calling themselves a community organizer. So I was like, but I'm not that, but like, and I didn't really have the language for political organizer. So I was like, what am I? But I like always was like, I was like, I can't co-opt community organizing because like, that's not what I'm doing. But yeah, so anyways, a little bit of an identity crisis there, I guess. But I think for me, as someone who's now been able to like tether both worlds, I actually think community organizing has a huge role to play in political organizing, and also vice versa. The way that I think about it is that, you know, whatever solutions, whatever issues you want to drive change for, politics and government is usually what you're going to end up advocating to and what you're going to want to end up changing to be able to get the change that you need. I don't think every change in society goes through politics or government, but most of them are touched on by politics and government. So I think community organizing can play a direct role in influencing how, you know, politicians prioritize certain issues or how they talk to certain communities and you know, who kind of shapes their own internal, you know, political teams as well. And I think political parties or political candidates, on the other hand, you know, can be held accountable by community organizing, right? Because community organizing is about people, and it's about people power, and it's about building people power. And politicians and governments need people power to be able to stay in power. So I think that community organizing, when it's done really well and done really properly, can actually really hold, you know, people's feet to the fire. But on the other hand, you know, you can also, when you're kind of smart and strategic about it, can really help to make sure that your issues and your priorities are heard in a good way when people get elected, and they can actually kind of work on giving you solutions that you need. I think that when we kind of see political and community organizing as like hostile to each other or as like not compatible with each other, I actually think we lose what we are trying to drive for at the end of the day, right? Like, we are trying to drive for change at the end of the day, and change requires power, or it requires government, or it requires that kind of, you know, I think like politics to be involved in it, right? So I think it's a shame when people like put them against each other, because I think when they work well together, actually you can drive really influential change, but you can also kind of like make sure that that change never wears off its course, because you can hold people's feet to the fire. So I think they work beautifully well together, and we need people in politics who have backgrounds in community organizing to bring those voices to the table. And we need people in community organizing that also understand politics, because if you don't understand politics, like, what are you really getting at the end of the day, right? So so yeah, I think there's like really great communion between the two. And like, you know, Emma, like, who's a good friend, I consider a good friend, we both, and I think she does too.
Oh, I'm so glad.
But yeah, not you,
oh,
the other
God,
Emma
not Jackson. Me.
No, the other Emma,
I was like,
Jackson.
Oh, we're good friends. No, okay, no, I'm glad.
The other Emma Jackson. But like, you know, and Emma's and I, not this Emma, the other Emma, our politics are actually very different. I remember, like, I worked for an MP whose like office Emma protested in, right? Like, it's like our politics are quite different. But I find some of my most like cathartic conversations to be with Emma, because she understands, like, you know, like, often like the issues we face are the same, because like we're both trying to build movements, and we're trying to build capacity and relational. We're doing that through relational and community and political organizing. So I think it's actually a really beautiful thing to have friend relationships across the spectrum, and to, you know, you can share ideas, but also, you know, you can kind of challenge each other as well. So I think there's like really beautiful things to learn from each other in those spaces. So yeah,
that's really cool. Actually, I feel like that speaks to sort of a thread throughout a lot of what we've talked about today, in terms of like not letting moral purity get in the way of building capacity and building power, like being willing
100%,
to
totally.
Yeah, work with folks that you don't like a million billion percent agree with. Yeah, I guess I'm wondering if you maybe have any just kind of any closing thoughts about what you would say to people who maybe are intimidated by, you know, organizing in a community sphere or a political sphere. What's do you have any words of encouragement for them? Maybe why they should join their Common Horizon chapter?
Yeah. Well, first of all, you should join your Common Horizon chapter, because you get to meet wonderful people like Emma and Hope and Grace, who are here today. Monica.
Bro.
That's like, you're bad. Cancel me now. Like, I'm so sorry. I looked at you also for help.
I gave no help. I was like, what are you trying to do?
It's also like, I'm that person where like, if there's a name that gets stuck in my head, like, that's, I'm wrong. Sorry. But like, yeah, that's wrong. It's like, you're just going to be called that now. So I'm really sorry. So I would say, first of all,
shout out to Monica. Doing the hard work of moving all the buttons.
And not even getting recognized, because I got her name
and getting misnamed.
Yes. But you get to meet amazing amazing people. You get to build community. And I think at the end of the day, when things can feel really, really hopeless and grim and dark as they are right now, I always find it really empowering to be able to just focus on my own community and be like, what change can I drive in my own place and neighborhood and through my own friends? And that's how I got started with Common Horizon. I hosted a little climate party at my house where, you know, this Emma was there, and we just talked to a bunch of people about, you know, kind of where we were feeling with the climate crisis. And from there, friends that I'd never even thought to really think about the climate crisis or stuff like this really thoughtfully, like, came, and they were super engaged, and I actually think they like loved it way more than anybody else that I thought would love it. So I think it's a beautiful thing to get involved. And I think if you're feeling shy or nervous, or you're like not sure if organizing is for you, I would say it is, first of all, absolutely for you. I think the best organizers are actually often the people that don't think of themselves as organizers. Because I think they do this work really naturally often. But I would just say, like, come out, try it out, and I think you'll be surprised at how much you love it, because at the end of the day, it's just about connecting with other people about things that you both care about, and it's really nothing more than that. You don't have to be an expert. You don't have to, like, be this perfect person. You're just here trying to bring people together, really, at the end of the day. That's really the heart of what organizing is. So, and I would say, you know, I think for someone who's more experienced, the advice that I would give them is, like, you know, you have to, I think sometimes we think organizing, maybe especially in the movement space, I don't know if this is true, but I think sometimes we're just like, yeah, like, we're doing things, they're fun, and like, kind of, you know, like, you know, it's like, it's kind of cool. And I think it's cool to try new things and to, you know, to be just kind of be building it as you go. But I also think, like, that you have to take it seriously. And I think you have to, like, be organized and disciplined and, like, you know, be, like, really genuinely invested in it and want to care about it. So, I think it's, like, kind of the best thing in the world to bring people together on something that they care about, because who knows where you're going to go from there, right? Like, you build it together. It's not something you build in a vacuum. So it can really take shape into beautiful forms.
Beautiful. Any last questions you want to ask, and or beautiful messages you have for the potential future organizers out there?
I might just say one quick thing, just looking at time. But I really loved everything that you were saying, Harnoor, and I Aww. Think, like, it was just making me think of when you were talking about working on a campaign feeling like a summer camp. And I feel like people talk about summer camps, people talk about, like, their university times as, like, some of the highlights of their lives, because it's the times that they are so, like, deeply connected to other people 100%. In a very, like, concentrated kind of period of time, and often, like, like-minded people, too. And I think, like, I'm just consistently thinking all the time about how we're literally being manufactured into these, like, atomized, like, mm-hmm. lifestyles and very separate, individualized lifestyles. Even the way, like, we, like, think about our beliefs is very individualized these days. And I think being able to join any sort of campaign or organization allows people to break free from that, like, individualization that has been, like, forced upon us, and realize, like, oh, I think this, but also a lot of other people feel this. And actually, that means that these are collective problems mm-hmm. and not just things that I'm going to, like, spiral about and, like, feel horrible about on my own. And, like, we were talking about this, I guess, last, like, 2 weeks ago, too. But it always comes back to things. We are always not only stronger together, but we are literally just meant to be together. Mm. Like, we are so social as beings, and we are living in this world that is so that is pushing us to be antisocial and not together. And what's the point? So,
hell yeah.
Let's get together, guys.
We are meant to be together. Let's get together.
Oh. Can I, on that note,
yeah, close us out.
Can I give a really quick shout out?
Oh my God,
this is like very selfish, but my partner Raj is listening in from Edmonton. And I think, speaking of being meant to be together. Yeah, whatever. Like, that's fine. But I actually think, you know, this stuff, honestly, guys, like, this, like, organizing is, you know, so, it can be also really dreary and hard, and it's such a long-term game. But, like, you really need friends and partners and your community cats. To fuel you through it, and cats. And so I think, you know, we're also lucky to kind of have people in our lives that help fuel us to keep this work going. So just a little shout out to the person that, you know, I think fuels me. And, and yeah, to Emma too for inviting me.
Okay,
and thank
it's too late. It's over.
Shout out to our loved ones.
All right. Well, thanks so much to everyone who tuned in this evening for our beautiful conversation on our show, Towards a Common Horizon. You've been listening to us on CJLO 1690 AM. I'm Emma signing off.
I'm Hope signing off.
And thanks so much to Harnoor for chatting with us.
Thank you for having me.
Come listen to us in 2 weeks.
See you then.
Yeah. I can't wait to tune in.
Bye.